Ну, там, наверное, пошло записываться, да. Птицы побежали в штучки. Ну, ладно тогда.
У них начали.
Okay, well, I guess we'll get started. So I'll just do a quick introduction here. Andre is from Elfool Inc. They're a local company. They do some really cool camera stuff, mostly with panoramic cameras. They brought some equipment today, so hopefully that will be part of the presentation. We'll get to see what's happening with that. And if you guys have any questions, please ask during the talk, I assume. And please tell us about your new system.
Okay. Last year, I don't know how many or who was present on my last presentation last year where I described how we calibrated like individual camera because mostly we started with operations and that became obvious after we built the first panoramic camera, because for normal camera, because lens always works better in the center part of the image, and in the corners resolution is much worse. Also there is some vignetting, so the corners are darker than the middle, but with just single camera people got to use with it, and sometimes even use it to advantage, because you're mostly interested what's in the center of the image. But with panoramic cameras where you stitch multiple cameras, that's not the case, and there's no center, and the corners will become become inside in the middle of some interesting part. So we started with the need to improve resolution in the corners, and with the lenses also there wasn't much choice, because either you go to the big sensors and big lenses, and then the whole system would be rather big and with large parallax, or you go to smaller format lenses, smaller sensors to make it all compact, but then there are not so many high resolution lenses in this class of cameras. Last year I described about individual, like how we calibrated. So again, and first started with aberration, but then used the same pattern to correct lens distortions. It's pretty common task. In many cases, people just calibrate lenses using the like on the go, using the real images. In some cases, it's possible to do some correction of the distortions just using the images that acquired of the And so to process and calibrate from the same image set. Here, what we try to make real precise calibration, so the precision would be better than reasonable, what you can like achieve some sub-pixel matching with correlation. So is that okay? Like make it 1/10 of a pixel, so that you can trust coordinates of each pixel to 1/10, about 1/10 of a pixel. That gives some margin, so the any like reasonable sub-pixel correlation can still rely on the pixel being kind of precise. This autumn we presented our setup at SIGGRAPH, and there is this pattern in the background. It's not completely in focus, but it's like a checkerboard pattern, but not with a straight side, but each side of the square is curved, like two semicircles. And that, while still being periodic and easy to match, it greatly improves the spectrum of the spectrum of this grid. So it kind of illuminates more of the in the frequency domain than just with a straight checkerboard. So to measure point spread function of the lens, and so to be able to correct aberrations, we need to get more information of over the all frequency domain, and the straight checkerboard pattern illuminates kind of only some narrow areas. With the curved, it's more uniform, and it's better for aberration, so to measure length aberrations, and then using the convolution and apply them from the final images. Then we use the same pattern, so also to measure length distortions, like not just from the. So it's more convenient to measure the from the when we know that the pattern is known. But the precision we needed, it was much higher than we can print this pattern. So also when it's attached to the wall, it's not kind of perfectly flat. The wall is not flat, the pattern is not flat, so it has some still like 3D shape. So what we do during this distortion correction, we only kind of assume that the shape doesn't change during the calibration process. It's not flat. It's not the distances are not exactly equal between the grid nodes, but at least they don't change during calibration. So at first we assume them as being kind of ideal pattern, but then at later stages when we then after we calibrate the camera, we in parallel we calculate the actual 3D positions of each. Of each of the grid nodes. This camera that is shown here, it has like 24 sensors looking with small overlaps looking around, covering full sphere. And this particular camera, it also has, they're not shown visible here, but there are two more sensors near the bottom. So there, it's not enough to get that 3D information from all the scene, because they're only paired with two cameras on top. But it allows to measure distances to some objects. And then if you have multiple kind of spherical images acquired from multiple points, if you have some common points where you know distance, you can triangulate and so know precisely the mutual position of the two image sets. But for this, having the lenses in the bottom allows us to kind of precisely measure the 3D shape of the pattern, and it's to like about 1/10 of a millimeter at this distance. Yeah. So we showed it on at SIGGRAPH this year. And it was really interesting because we never went to SIGGRAPH. But it was far from complete success, because while the camera itself, they could compare it with like Ladybug, this point grey, because pretty close, so the resolution and quality. But most people, they really wanted kind of turnkey solution. They wanted more of the process and software that we couldn't offer, because we were centered about the hardware, and so that they could see the quality and resolution of the images, but it's not what most people need. If they were looking for 3D reconstruction software, and our hardware is designed to be a precise tool for to get images for 3D reconstruction, but we don't have this is our software, and probably it will stay this for at least for some time.
What sort of comments did you get relative to the size of your device compared to the point grey ones are pretty small in general.
Yeah, it is pretty small, and actually they target a little different application. It's more like video. Here we can get to like maximum like 5 frames per second, but as we do aberration correction, we need high quality. And then we work at about like 1 to 2 frames per second. So it's not video, but we try to get as far as we can in resolution and precision of each, so that you can use it for measurements. We used similar camera, a little smaller that we had. Last year we used it attached to a backpack, because the camera itself, of course, I didn't probably explain the camera itself is only a blue thing, and the red one, it's like pan tilt device for this big camera. So it has horizontal rotation axis, so the camera can tilt up to horizontal position, and then also it has it can rotate around its own axis in some like rollers. So the second motor that rotates camera around its own axis. And from the pattern side, there is nothing. I mean, it's designed so that if you tilt it, there will be nothing occluding the full field of so the. Because the camera it covers all sphere. Of course, realistically, if you put it on something, it will see like the car top or. But if you drop it from some airplane, then it will be able to see completely. Yeah, because on top also it doesn't see this. There's like IMU and GPS on top, and it also the view on your left above at some distance, probably several meters. It's kind of overlaps. So the camera is not that big, and it's mostly for to put it on a car or on. Yeah, we use the same on the backpack. While working on this, we came into the problem that we need much better thermal. Compensation of the distance between the image sensor and the lens, because of the thermal expansion of aluminum, distance changes, and while it is still kind of in depth of field range, so if you put it in the center of a reasonable kind of environmental temperature, it will stay in focus, but it moves like several microns from the hot, what we measured was 0.2 microns per degree Celsius. So while it's still in focus, it changes. And so if you calibrate it to do deconvolution, these kernels will change with temperature. So while it's still kind of in focus, it's not good enough for aberration correction. So we have to kind of measure all these thermal movements, and then we used so image sensor is on some plate that's mounted on INVAR rods that are attached here. They have kind of virtually zero thermal expansion, and also we kind of and then attach even more rings so to measure to match exactly. So the, that's like statistically that's different lenses. So we got to about 10 times smaller thermal expansion than with just aluminum. Yeah. So here it shows the setup. So there's a smaller like increased size the pattern with this curved sides and two axes where the camera is rotated. Because the pattern is not ideal, so it has its own shape, and so we need to know the absolute location. So on the image we need to get exactly what which cell we are looking at, because they're all different. And for these, to keep the pattern itself uniform for aberration correction, we didn't decided not to put any kind of different cells to like index cells. So we used like laser pointers, like similar to this one. That program like there are four at some distance from the corners, and the program can like turn them on and off, and subtract images so to find which kind of absolute location of each cell of the pattern it sees, and then so it acquires 24 here and 2 on the bottom images simultaneously, and scans all the rotations with like about probably 30% overlap, and it takes about 450 image sets, like of 26 images, and that's used as a data for adjusting, so to find all the distortions of each lens, like how each lens is mounted inside the camera, because they have some certain precision how they're positioned and oriented in the camera, and these so the lens if there's a pattern we use like 13 parameters that can describe each camera related to the target coordinate system. So it's position, orientation of the camera, and then lens parameters like focal length, then the center of distortion where it is on the sensor. During adjustment, we try to keep it in the center of the sensor, but of course there's like plus minus some 10 to 20 pixels it can be off. And then we used like a radial distortion model for the lens with like four variable parameters that describe distortion. But this is probably kind of most minimal set of parameters describing each lens. But to do the adjustment, we needed to use that all the lenses are mounted in the same camera, so they are mutual in the camera coordinate system. Their lens parameters don't change from between different image sets, and. So this is kind of parameter describing each lens, but for adjustment we used other parameters. So first it's a actually their father, but there's just lenses of the camera shown, and there was like six parameters that were describing position of the sensor front end, the lens with the sensor, relative to the camera. And this, so these parameters, they are approximately known from the kind of mechanical design, but they are not. They can change. They do not change during calibration and camera usage, but they need to be found from the calibration process. So these parameters, they are common to all image sets, but they have to be adjusted. Then also the camera itself has position and orientation as a whole, and while it's kind of the minimal is six parameters to describe, but here we needed to there are two motors that kind of rotate the cameras and two axes, and the rest parameters, so only two are variable, and the rest at least theoretically should stay the same and not change from one image to another. But the machine is also not ideal, so there's some angle between the two axes that we can rotate, and there can be some distance between these two axes. So there's nine parameters, they describe like only two variables, tilt and axial, like these two angles. They are variable. All the rest, again, they are common for all the for the image sets. Actually, we had to later we noticed that because the calibration process takes a long time. It's like about 10 hours. So we put it on the for the night to run all this calibration, and in the morning can come back and just get this file. But we noticed that some images didn't fit. Image sets after, so they kind of seem normal, but there are few, not many, but several images they didn't fit with others, and so it seemed that the floor is not perfectly stable, and when heavy trucks are passing by, it caused some shake of the camera, and so it needed one more kind of degree of freedom. Yeah, and with this it was all kind of working. So with the with this, so the all the images are acquired at the same time. So all the so the image 26 images acquired simultaneously, they had the same orientation. And also, we when we went through all the image sets, on some you can have laser pointers to do kind of absolute so knew exactly which where the camera was looking at, but on some still we didn't get any laser pointers. It could get some corner or some part of the target without the laser pointers, but kind of knowing that like the other camera from the same at the same position got the laser pointer, then you can and because their mutual orientation didn't change, you can use the images even those that didn't have laser pointers. And actually at later stages we could use even some images that didn't have laser, none in the set had laser pointers. But because we already could predict where it should look, then this error was less than the period of the grid. Then you can just find this, and with this it worked pretty well. So we used Lindbergh markup algorithm to do fitting all the parameters, and the total number of simultaneously adjusted parameters, so they are like about 250, because about 200 of the parameters that describe the all the sensors and the camera. And also because we fitted simultaneously like about 450 image sets, each of them had at least two, if not three, for the trucks, variables, parameters that were different for each of the image sets. So it will be plus 900 to 1300 if three parameters. So it was from 1,000 to 1,500 parameters adjusted simultaneously, and the number of points. And point here it was coordinates of the grid nodes of the target, each having like x and y on the sensor. So the what was and they were kind of treated independently. So each image gave usually from 1 to 5,000 points that could be adjusted. Also, as I described, each sensor has just 13 parameters, and using this fitting, the partial derivatives were calculated for these parameters describing each sensor. But then the variable parameters of the camera, the physical camera, it was like 22 parameters for each sensor. We used a matrix between the 22 and 13 parameters because they didn't change. So for each image they were the same. It took some time to make this LMA work, because sometimes if there were some errors, they didn't. It wasn't so obvious that the something was wrong, because there are many reasons why it can converge or not converge, and so I had to develop a lot of visualization tools how to see what are all these partial derivatives, how they behave, at some point when using this lens distortion model, so it was possible to adjust all the images, so to fit to about how little, maybe 0.7 pixel root mean square error. After this, we adjusted the actual shape, the 3D shape of the target, and then so this was just measuring errors for each pixel of each sensor between the kind of reprojection error, and then adjusting grid the 3D coordinates of the grid to like subtract this error, and then multiple iterations, improved the like root mean square to about 0.4 pixels. The next was that this radial lens distortion model wasn't enough to describe the actual lens. So after this, we used what remained. It's one of the probably X, the X projection error on the sensor. Like, so this is the radial distortion model formula, after these parameters are adjusted, there are still some. This was just like a arbitrary. It was not for each pixel, because it's not that we need need that high resolution. It's a kind of reduced resolution from the sensor, but it was just measured and saved the residual error between the actual lens and the radial distortion model. And in the corners, it can get up to like 0.8 pixels. And after these, so when we adjusted this residual error, we could get to under 0.1 pixel Rutland square of fitting for all these images. And the very worst images, those that kind of took only were in the only corner part of the sensor. Because in some images, the grid appears only on small kind of camera hooks at other side and only small portion of the and the error there, it kind of amplifies the errors in the corners where it's more difficult to measure. It was like 0.3 pixels. Yeah, so all together it was pretty good, and this bundle adjustment fit pretty good, and in the result we have a camera that we can trust each pixel where so if we map it on the we know line in space where it comes from, and all the center of the lens in the camera, and we know precisely the angles, so that like two angles where this line goes. Yeah, so this is a kind of source information for the 3D reconstruction. Actually, simultaneously with the using the same grid pattern, we also measured the vignetting of the lens. So with the darker corners, also it has very minor but still some like color variation because of the micro lens filters that's used for the sensor. They are not exactly the same for different colors in the corners. So this function can be slightly different. It's mostly the same. So it doesn't have any color tint in the visible. But for precise measurements, there is small variation. So we measure it for each color individually, and then this also we can when we acquire images with darker corners, we can divide them by each color by this function and get to the. Of course, there will be more noise in the corners because of the less light and less less levels for the pixel. So it will be more noise in the corners, but at least it will be all the same intensity. And
do you have any diffraction effects at the corners also in addition?
Diffraction because of what?
Because of the shape of the lens. So different color channels will diffract differently within the lens, and will red will be offset from green, which will be offset from blue.
There are some other thing. It's not because diffraction is still kind of there. In the corners there, especially the lens is still much worse than diffraction limit, not much, but this we can, this we cannot see separately because it's part of the when we measure point spread function, it includes diffraction and lens aberration simultaneously, and we measure it anyway. We measure it separately for each color, and then apply for the, so it's difficult to kind of separate them one from another. And these lenses, they don't have regulated iris, and actually for the small sensor pixels, iris doesn't have much sense because of the diffraction limit and the small pixels. It's like the maximal f number is just pixel size divided by the wavelength regardless of the focal length. So with the 2.2 microns, it's like about three and a half So if you close lens like to 4 or 5.6, it will be, the diffraction will be limited. So this lens is 1.8. So even if it had iris, you could only reduce light maybe maybe three stops. So not much. So this is why they usually don't make. On the other hand, these rolling shutter sensors, they have perfect shutter ratio. And if you just have too much light, you can just make exposure really short. And
did you consider at all using your distortion function assumes that everything's circular. Did you consider using an elliptic model at all? Because if your lens like leans a little bit relative to the sensor, it'll shape more like an ellipse.
Yeah, but I mean, it's actually this is small, and what I tried that because when you subtract the radial distortion model, you don't see like ellipses. It's more in the corners, but also it's more kind of random. So there's not much for this lens. Maybe you can get to some improvement. Using the separate axis and but it says okay. So radial distortion and then arbitrary the smooth function to encode the difference. We say that it's just images, like TIFF images and metadata of the like distortion parameters and position of each lens are like stored in this image metadata, and it's easier to use it to doing correction that uses this lens parameters. Also, I didn't finish this software, but we started that to work on the because there's a parallax between lenses. So for some far objects, it's okay. They match. You can stitch them. But for the closer objects, they will not. If you just map them on the, they will not match because of the parallax. So I started to work on using overlap between two images to do some like partial 3D reconstruction to measure distances, and then to use some synthetic image, as if it was from the camera center, not from the kind of the actual position. So I tried several methods, mostly based on just correlation between images, and mostly just like so combination between. So first find some like candidates for the disparity from correlation, and then use like matching the tone matching of the pixels like in this range this somewhat worked, but then I started to work also on testing different edge detection algorithms to do some line detection, because there are many areas where not much information for 3D, and that was here it was frequency domain line kind of linear feature detection, and it can actually works much better than just local edge detection, but. It can be used, but this is what I just started, but not finished yet. And then there is the camera. Actually, now it's not used in this mode, but it's the camera that's there, and we plan to do kind of make put more of them. It's for, and we have some like simple demo, but it's online, so you can look it on the on the internet on this. With this, what we tried is just to also calibrate it using the same machine, calibrated each of the camera channels, and then kind of match them together. And maybe this is kind of in this you can better see that the matching is really under significantly under one pixel, because on the panorama you. I mean, okay, it's nice, but you can see. So it's not so until you really start to do some reconstruction, you can see how what's the difference between is it precise or not precise. With this, we could really see that it's it matches. And so what Oleg made a small HTML5 application with like you put three images, and you can just with the scroll wheel you can adjust the disparity. And it really kind of looks like focusing on, because remember in some old photo camera you had this for focusing, not from the lens, but when there's like a range finder with two small lenses, and then you rotate, they match, and it rotates the lens focus at the same time. But when there's just two images, it's just they look like two images. With three images, it looks. If you look at this application, it looks much better, so you can simulate like a shallow depth of field. So the kind of the idea of this camera was actually to make a camera for like cinematographic applications with shallow depth of field, because this is what you can get with a large camera, large sensors. But with the small cameras, like used in the cell phones or the same as we use, you can't get so everything is in focus. You can't get like a make a movie with human face being in focus and the background or some foreground bushes or something being out of focus. With the small physical dimension, it's everything scales to the dimension of the sensor. So if you have sensor that is like 5 or 6 times smaller, than the 35 millimeter field, then you can do the same only in the like toy house with the dolls or instead of the so it will the range will be maybe 1 to 2 meters where you can play with this like use the depth of field for artistic. Not just only for artistic, so you can use depth of field to just to show the focus of the scene, and also you can it's a way how to show the 3D nature of the world on the 2D screen by showing some objects are in focus and some not. So this is and maybe we will put more cameras to. With this, it seems to be much easier to also for 3D, like partial 3D reconstruction for depth of field, because if the result should be like 3D model, then and if there are no distinct features in the field of view, it's really difficult to find what's the distance. But if you use it for synthesizing depth of field, the areas where there is no where there are no features, it doesn't matter how you blur it, because it's you don't need to know the distance. If you use the distance only to simulate to make like synthetic depth of field like they do in the like 3D movie or 3D animations, where there's no cameras but there's still some objects in focus and some behind. And we also found that using these three images, we could easily put more of them, it can be a really convenient tool for the operator or artist to do some post-focusing, because the computation it's very easy to just to move the images compared to all the convolution with the and do real rendering with the correct so like render 3D scene into 2D image using like some depth of field. So it's kind of computationally difficult thing, but just moving several. So probably we can use the same approach with these images, not just to show images from the 3 or 7 physical cameras, but just to use for synthetic images as a tool to adjust.
Are you familiar with the light field camera?
Yes, I mean this is this uses like big lens and like micro lenses, so the result is not that impressive because you need a really good lens, the first lens, but then you get much less resolution in the result. So this works, I think, better because there's no you don't lose any of resolution. If you put like 5 megapixels, you'll get 5 megapixels, and you can put at whatever distance you want. If you want, you can make this depth of field working on like 100 meters or some like mountains or some large object. Actually, with this camera, when you adjust it, you can see difference between infinity and like 150 meters. So it's about 1 pixel even smaller, but with the correlation you can see you can easily see half pixel. But 100 meters is just 1 pixel, so you can, and the precision is good enough, so you can so when we have some really far images, you can see the difference. Also, if you have more cameras looking at the same, you also can improve like signal to noise ratio, because of course it's like only square root of the number of cameras, but you can, if you combine them, you can get less sort of high dynamic range, and the sensors are inexpensive, so it's for the depth of field it can be much better to use like multi camera system compared to just big sensors and big lenses. Yeah, so other thing that we're playing with, and just no this three. So I need to probably modify the code that I made for the for this correlation of the pair of images to make it from arbitrary number of images, and I hope it will work.
So are artists your target audience with this device?
This mostly for like cinematographic application, because we have we had some enthusiasts working in the trying to make a cinematographic camera that used our camera to kind of add some software and some other hardware to make it for these kind of applications, and I just think it's more practical approach, and yeah, but we have multiple applications. We just recently built, so we also built it to have some independent kind of demonstration of what is precisely calibrated camera. Because here we just take, we don't do, if you look at this online demo, we didn't kind of fit any images to each other specially. So each image was just calculated, so raw image from the camera, calibration data was combined, and the result images, they kind of perfectly perfectly match each other. And yeah, so we are probably this calibrated process and precise sensors we started for this panoramic camera, but probably we will just make it a separate product, just single or three camera system that's precisely calibrated, and then it's up to our users to how to make measurements with it. Yeah, that's basically all.
Great.
Okay.
So this is why a lot of our users may find their own application in their own way.
Cool.
Anybody
else have any questions?
No, there weren't questions. So I do have one last little question. So it seems like you did a global optimization when you're working with your panoramic camera. Mm-hmm. Did you consider doing local optimizations for each individual sensor and then going to a global optimization? It seems like the scale of your global optimization was ridiculous.
But actually, kind of, I optimized the code, so this global optimization is not that. There are some, like, I have a set, you can make it to easily program which parameters to free and which to freeze for adjustment. That's separate. That's starting with some basic and then going to it's pretty fast. And the problem with the individual camera, individual sensor, is I don't know precisely distance like from the sensor, and I don't have the tools to measure distance from the sensor to the target, and I need to know it's like to 1 millimeter. The distance. Otherwise, it will be wrong focal length. Or if I know the target, and this is just single camera, single sensor, then I need to either to know distance or focal length. But when it's you can rotate it 360 around, then it can determine the because of the overlap and doing like a global optimization, it can find exactly the distance. So there's only one kind of linear measurement. It's the measurement of the target, and then it can calculate the rest from this. This was something I didn't know how good it will work when it will have to combine all the sensors around and make sure it's all 360. So when the last will match the first. So it really, when I calibrated this three sensor camera, I just put it in exactly, so without moving. So I first calibrated where the machine, this calibration machine is relative to the target. So I knew it from this spherical view camera. And then I just replaced, I didn't move this calibration machine. I put this three sensor camera. Also, I knew the shape of the target. It was like up to 10 millimeters difference from the ideal the distance from the wall. It was less like stretching the material, so it was also not ideal, but it was just maybe a couple millimeters, but more of the distance from, and not flatness. So I measured the precise shape of the target with the spherical view camera that has also the sensors on the bottom. And then I use this data to calibrate the single sensor. So calibrating single sensor, doing this local optimization, it can be done if you know precisely where the shape of the target and where the camera is. Yes, that looks cool.
Very interesting. Anything else? Well, thank you very much. Appreciate
it. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank
you. Thank you. Thank
you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
So you're going to make CX
here?
Yeah.